Today's podcast is brought to you by the Gen 40 Heater. Reduce your heating bills today and save $50 with code word HOWIEDEAL. To order, go to EdenPure.com. Enjoy the podcast.
She's the Boston Herald's wittiest wordsmith, the last woman standing at the Whiskey Priest. Once a very legitimate magazine that we definitely didn't make up named her the Michael Jordan of radio. Wait, don't you think we're laying it on a little thick here, Grace?
Just stick to the script.
Oh, okay. Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
Hello, New England. Welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. A somber day here at our studio as we mourn the great radio icon, Rush Limbaugh. I just saw a tweet here from the Federalist Sean Davis, and I think he put it really well. He said, Rush Limbaugh was the greatest broadcaster in history. The man created an industry from nothing, and in the process taught several generations of Americans about the virtues of freedom and liberty. He was a giant, irreplaceable, a legend who made this country immeasurably better. And President Trump was just on Fox, and he said, and I'm paraphrasing here, something along the lines of whether you loved him or you didn't, you respected him. And you have to respect someone who built that kind of fan base. And like Sean Davis said, really built a whole new industry from nothing. Talk radio was not talk radio until Rush Limbaugh. And I'm so happy to be joined right now by an expert in on all things media. Michael Harrison has served as the editor and publisher of Talkers, the leading trade publication in the American talk media industry, for the past 30 years. He also hosts the Michael Harrison Wrap, which you guys should definitely check out. He's a great perspective on all things media. Thank you so much for joining us, Michael.
Well, I'm sorry that I'm joining you under such unhappy circumstances, Grace, but thank you for having me on.
Thank you so much. And Michael, my first question would be, can you describe to people, because like I said, Talkers has been the leading trade publication in American talk for 30 years. What has Rush Limbaugh done for talk radio?
Rush Limbaugh did for talk radio what the Beatles or Elvis Presley did for rock and roll, or what any great talent does for the genre that they are talented in. They create a tidal wave of interest, and they take a lot of people along for the ride. His influence on this wonderful medium, this phenomenal medium, has been unparalleled. At a time, Grace, when radio it could have easily been on the wane, and radio personality is basically irrelevant in terms of popular figures, he raised it to a level that made it on a par with the most important platforms and the most important personalities, not just in broadcasting, but in politics. So the radio industry, not just talk radio, the radio industry owes Rush Limbaugh a tremendous debt of gratitude.
Michael, I'm a little bit younger. I was born in 1992, so I wasn't listening to Rush as far back as some people. But are there any political moments or, pop culture moments that you remember where everyone said, oh, you got to turn on Rush?
too many to start pulling them out of my head, which at this moment is obviously swirling with stories, memories, and here at Talkers, a little bit of confusion because this is a gigantic story, in terms of what we're doing. But I would say that an interesting aspect of Rush, when you talk about you starting to listen to him in the early 90s, and you being of a younger generation, when Limbaugh started in the late 80s, he was a comedian. He was very much a conservative version of, the left comedy shows that used satire. He was a conservative satirist, and a large percentage of what he did was extremely tongue-in-cheek. A lot of the things that went on to become his catchphrases were actually kind of like, funny, like, performing with one half of my brain tied behind my back, or even, Excellence in Broadcasting Network was a joke. It was, EIB. It actually became, people think that's the name of the network. He became more and more serious as the implication of his work became more and more serious. So I think that the story arc with Rush is how he went from being a radio performer who used politics as his shtick to becoming a thought leader in America.
And Michael, I keep, you know, drawing comparisons because I obviously work with Howie Carr, but when Howie was one of Rush's biggest fans, we used to listen to him all the time when we drive to remotes. And I do notice a similarity with some of these big radio icons where they're able to, they're very bright, they have all of this knowledge, they have a Rolodex of information, but they're able to deliver it in a really entertaining way, so they don't really, they don't ostracize anyone from the conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and entertainment really is the key to communication. I guess the word that we're using today, better than entertainment, because people think entertainment means telling jokes and yucking it up. But the fact is, entertainment means engaging people.
Yeah.
Engaging, not just putting out information, but grabbing them through the speaker, or if it's TV, through the screen, or if it's written through the page, and pulling them in and saying, you will pay attention because you are engaged. And that's really what it is. A couple of things real fast that I'd like to share with you is, one, Limbaugh loved radio more than anything. And that's why he worked every day that he could while suffering with, you know, stage four lung cancer. He did radio with a tremendous hearing loss, which has got to be just mind boggling to try to do that. He was suffering from drug addiction, meds and, you know, OxyContin, and he overcame that. He overcame boycotts. He overcame threats to his life. He lived in many ways an isolated life with bodyguards because he was such a controversial figure. His dedication to his craft was unparalleled. And what really was important to point out was that he was an original thinker. He brought every day to the airwaves, whether you agree with him or not, original angles on the news as opposed to talking points that so many talk show hosts do. They just do the talking points and they all sound the same. Rush would come up every day with something brand new, a new angle, and then the other hosts would begin to follow him. And by the end of the week, if he did it on a Monday, by Friday, everybody was saying what Rush said.
And it's funny because, Michael, I remember at one of the talkers conferences we went to, a guy got up and he was explaining, he was a sports radio guy, and he was explaining part of the key of how he tries to get people to listen to him isn't just to have, you know, a strong opinion, but to have a unique opinion, like you were just saying. And he said, you can get the news from so many places, but there's something to be said for people tuning in and saying, I need to know what Rush thinks about this. And I really do think that's how a lot of people thought of Rush, was here's the news story. Let me tune into Rush and see what he has to say about it.
Exactly. And that is what really set him apart from everybody else. Although I would be remiss if I didn't throw in, he was an awfully good a practitioner of the radio arts. He understood how to handle himself in that symphony known as a radio station or a radio show, which is a whole art form that many latter-day talk show hosts don't understand. Rush comes from Top 40 radio. He comes from the golden age of radio. He grew up during the age of radio, and he was very influenced by a lot of the DJs that knew how to just, you know, rhythmically move through the paces of the continuum of sound that is a radio show or a radio station. And he did it masterfully. Then you add the passion, you add the entertainment, and you add the original political insights, and you have a package that's just unbelievable. And also, liberals liked to listen to Rush to hate him. Conservatives don't like listening to liberals, but liberals often will listen to a conservative because it galvanizes their own thoughts of what they think. And part of his massive audience was liberals who loved hating Rush.
Yeah, and Michael, to your point, there's a lot of people right now on social media who are saying, you know, prepare yourselves because a lot of these crazy left-wing people are going to come out and say horrible things about Rush, which, you know, happens when someone dies. People on both sides, you know, they can be pretty ghoulish. And someone else said, well, you know, it really tells you about the impact he made that people are get so riled up either way. And it's like what President Trump said, you know, you could love him or hate him, but you should respect him because of the impact he made in this industry.
There's no question about it. And very well said. He deserved respect for his success and for the impact he made, not just on the industry, but on the nation. And also, back to what I said before, being a dedicated guy who really loved what he did and did it with pain, with obstacles, and with critics.
Absolutely. Michael Harrison from Talkers. Michael, where can people check you out online if they want to read a little bit of Talkers? And I know you guys will be creating a lot of content about this very sad day.
Very easy. Talkers.com.
Thank you so much for joining the show, Michael. He is our expert in all things media, and I can only imagine how devastated a lot of people in the industry are. I know from my point of view, it's sad. You looked up to this guy. You really, every day, like Michael said, he had a different take on everything and a unique perspective. And a lot of us could only hope to have that kind of unique perspective, because it's hard nowadays. You get your information from a lot of places and you get your opinions from a lot of people, but to have a unique, unafraid guy who would get out there every day with such passion and such talent is really rare. Now, we will be getting to some Joe Biden sound cuts after the break. We will have Carol Markowitz at 1:30. Big show today. I have great news for my listeners. The Gen 40 heater is back and just in time for the really cold temps. Taylor is the Gen 40 expert, so I'm going to let him tell you a little bit about this incredible machine.
I've used one for many months now. I stole it out of Howie's office, and it's in Harrison's room at home. My son, he's 6 months old this weekend, and he sleeps through the night because we have the Gen 40 heater there constantly on when he's sleeping. Keeps the room very comfortable, and when during the day, we take it out of the room. We use it all over the house if we want to keep it down on our heating bills. It's very light, very easy to transport, very easy to use is a very big factor here. It's only a few buttons on there, and it shuts off when it needs to, so it conserves energy.
That was my question, Taylor, because I think a lot of people, when they hear about a space heater, they get nervous if they have kids or if they have dogs or cats, that someone's going to trip over it. It's a very safe machine.
Sure. If it does happen to fall over, it shuts right off. Automatic safety feature. You don't have to worry about it, you know, causing any fires or any damage at all in that regard. So it gives you a lot of peace of mind in every facet that it works in.
Guys, go to EdenPure.com and put in code word Howie Deal to get $50 off the sale price. That's EdenPure.com and use code word Howie Deal for an extra $50 off. These heaters are in high demand, so go right now to EdenPure.com. We will be back with more news about this sad topic, Rush Limbaugh, but we're also going to play some more Joe Biden because, you know, the sound just does not stop with this guy. Last night was an absolute train wreck. And I know a lot of people compare him to like a grandpa, but I don't think that does justice to a lot of grandpas out there. I don't think they want to be put in the same boat with Joe Biden. We'll be back on the other side, guys. This is The Grace Curley Show.
She's the friend you never knew you needed.
What? Did we just become best friends?
Yep.
Okay, make that best friend. It's Grace Curley.
His fight was very, very courageous, and he was very, very sick. And, you know, from diagnosis on, it was just something that was not going to be beaten, but you wouldn't know it. And he is married to an incredible woman, Catherine, who really, every time I spoke to him, he would tell me how great she was. She took such great care. He was very brave. I mean, he, in theory, could have been gone 4 months ago, really. He was fighting till the very end. He was a fighter.
He certainly was. And I keep seeing comments on social media and people just paying their respects. And it's there's going to be some nasty tweets, too. You know, that comes with it, I guess. I haven't seen it when a Democrat passes away or a liberal passes away. I have not seen Republicans do this, but it seems to be a habit from Democrats.
Jim Acosta just tweeted, Fox News had Trump on, but didn't ask him about the insurrection he caused.
Oh, gosh, Jim. Jim, you're hiding behind the bushes at his golf course. Why don't you ask him? These people they're despicable. And I was just explaining to someone, I said he was a radio host. He was much more than that. But you're going to see serious people with blue check marks and you know, professors saying the nastiest things. And I'm not going to give them any sort of play here on the air because it really makes me sick. But it just shows you these people, they're deranged. That's the best way I can put it. They're deranged. We are going to get you a little bit of Joe Biden news here. He had a town hall last night. Like I said, it was, I thought it was, you know, and I should be fair here. Taylor Cormier, he pulls a lot of this sound. Taylor, I thought it was worse than when he was running.
Well, I think it's a little bit of an effect that this man is now running the country. That's why you think it's worse. I see a lot of the same, but now that that he's in office, the words of a president matter, as he says, and has said throughout the campaign. Now they really matter, and when he doesn't know what he's saying,
exactly.
It's scary.
And there was a lot of times where he would stop himself and say, you know, I'm sorry for going on. I'm sorry. It just did not seem like he was all there. I want to just go through a couple of these, the ones that stand out to me for being very strange. Let's play cut one.
Everybody knows I like kids better than people.
I like kids better than people. I consider kids to be people. Is that a stretch? Am I wrong on that?
To be fair, everybody knows he likes kids.
No comment on that.
He was playing Mario Kart with his granddaughter.
That's very true. He's a big fan of Mario Kart. He also had a moment where he said, for someone who keeps referring to Trump, like everything was Trump's fault, he inherited bad stuff from Trump. The other guy, he has received a call from every past president except for one. That's his little tease for you guys. Can you figure out which one didn't call him? But he wants you to know he's tired.
Was it FDR? Yeah.
I
don't know why he hasn't picked up the phone.
It was Taft. Taft is not a Biden guy. No, let's play. This is him saying he's tired of talking about Trump. This is cut 14.
What'd the president do? And I don't want to pick on the press. I'm tired of talking about Donald Trump. Don't want to talk about him anymore. But
I don't believe you. This is cut 15.
Before the Senate voted to acquit the former president in the impeachment trial, you said you were anxious to see if Republican senators would stand up. Only seven did. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi called the rest cowards. Do you agree with her?
I'm not going to call names out. For 4 years, all that's been in the news is Trump. The next 4 years, I want to make sure all the news is the American people. I'm tired of talking about Trump.
Let's be honest, Anderson Cooper. And I know Anderson Cooper is not the best journalist. He's really good when he's, you know, making fun of people who stay at the Marriott, but he's not that good with, you know, asking tough questions of Joe Biden. But what made you think that a guy who would not say how he felt about impeachment while it was going on is going to comment on it now? The impeachment failed. Biden is staying as far away from that as humanly possible.
He still hasn't told us if he wants to pack the courts or not, so.
Taylor, he was afraid. I think this was people ran with a different headline, but if you watch the video, he was afraid to guess who was going to win the Super Bowl. He was afraid to bet on one team. And not that there was money involved, you know, like there wasn't big time money. It was just something in an interview where you say, oh, I'm rooting for so-and-so. Hillary Clinton one time didn't want to say what her favorite ice cream was. But I find that to be just as concerning. Like, you can't pick a football team for the Super Bowl.
Ice cream is one thing. I can kind of understand the football because fans are very, very dedicated people. If you say, I hate the Patriots or I hate Tom Brady, as I've said, you get some blowback from that. And then you
as
get
you
some,
should.
And then you see. And then you get
as
some
you
people.
Shut your mic off,
give you
damn it.
Guff over it.
Yeah, but you know what I will say? If you're too afraid to say what team you support in the Super Bowl and you're 78 years old and you're probably only going to be president for one term, I'm not shocked when you're too afraid to stand up to teachers' unions or to China. Think about that. And we're going to talk to Carol Markowitz about this in the next segment. He is 78 years old. Do I have that right? I don't want to age him. God forbid. He's 78 years old. This is likely going to be, you know, his final office that he holds, and it's probably going to be one term, and he still doesn't have the cojones to say, listen, teachers, you're getting back to work. Let's figure this out right now. These kids are not struggling anymore. You get no more suicides, no more depression. We're getting the kids back in the schools. If you don't have the guts to do that at this point in your life, Joe, I'm frightened for you, because what else is he getting bullied on? Obviously China, will play that clip too, but this guy is just, he's easily bullied, and he's the commander in chief. Very, very frightening. We'll be talking to Carol Markowitz from the New York Post and from Spectator on the other side. Do not go anywhere. This is the Grace Curley Show.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio.
I think a year from now, when it's 22 below zero here, a year from now, I think that there'll be significantly fewer people having to be socially distanced, have to wear a mask, etc. But we don't know.
Welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. That frightening clip was Joe Biden last night in his town hall. Before I get to that, I want to tell everyone again, just in case anyone's just tuning in, that unfortunately Rush Limbaugh did pass away today. We are sending our deepest condolences to his family. We'll be talking about it throughout the course of the show. I know Howie will be talking about it in his show, so we'll keep you guys updated with, you know, all the tributes that come in and all of that. But our heartfelt sympathies to the entire Limbaugh family as they, you know, try to cope with this and try to mourn such a legend. And we're just thinking about them all throughout today and for the future. I'm very excited to welcome our next guest, Carol Markowitz. She writes for the New York Post. She writes for Spectator. She's on Fox all the time. She's on Newsmax all the time. And she's on Twitter at Carol, K-A-R-O-L. Carol, thank you so much for being with us.
Hi, Grace. Thanks so much for having me.
Carol, so let's talk about that first cut. Because when I was watching the town hall and I see that first cut, I thought of what you said about the forever pandemic. Because you wrote a brilliant piece in the New York Post where you said, we cannot have this go on forever. And tell people a little bit about that.
So as the vaccines roll out, I'm very encouraged about seeing the end of this thing, about stopping to wear masks, about seeing my friends as much as I want again, about seeing people's faces, about living life again, about my kids going back to school full time. Let's put that right at the top of the list. But I don't see that same zeal for the people. And I keep seeing downplaying of the vaccines as if they're not a miracle, as if they're not a scientific marvel, but they are. And so I'm very worried about this forever pandemic mindset where even after we're mostly vaccinated, that we'll still be wearing masks and we'll still be social distancing because people are afraid and they can't let go of it. And that anxiety is very hard to let go of. And I get that. And I want to move people away from it.
Yeah, I saw that you tweeted today something I found interesting. I wasn't sure where it was from, but you tweeted a quote that said, anxiety can be habit forming and we need to make a conscious decision to go back to our regular lives.
Right. That was from a New York Times piece about schools still not being open in Oregon and how people are just so scared, even though, you know, study after study, scientist after scientist have told us that kids largely don't get this and schools are not a place of active transmission. It's very rare to see clusters form in schools. So we have the situation where this anxiety is habit forming and we see it actually happening all around us. And so my goal is definitely to talk people down from it and to say that as soon as we get vaccinated, you can start living your own life again. You can go back to the way things were and you don't have to live in fear and live with a mask on and live not seeing your family and your friends.
Well, I'm glad you're doing that because we know the president is not. But one thing he did last night, and I don't think he meant to do this, but he kind of tore up his entire argument about keeping these schools shut down. I want to play a little bit of this for you, Carol. This is cut 8.
Well, first of all, honey, what's your first name?
Layla.
Beautiful name. First of all, kids don't get the vaccine, get COVID very often. It's unusual for that to happen. They don't. The evidence so far is children aren't the people most likely to get COVID, number one.
Carol, when you heard that, were you screaming at your television like, yeah, we know, open up the schools?
Right. I mean, I've been saying that since spring. It's so wild to me that nobody's taking responsibility for the fact that kids have lost a year, and yet Joe Biden says something like that, and it's correct, of course, but it's a little bit past the time when you should be saying that. And even now, even with that, his goal is still so small, to open schools mostly in 100 days by May. May is usually when we're closing schools down for the summer, and yet that's the goal right now, to open it around then. I frequently have smoke coming out of my ears.
But Carol, the other thing that I've noticed is there doesn't seem to be a real cohesion with this administration. On one hand, you have Jen Psaki saying our idea of opening schools is having one day a week. And then Biden comes out yesterday and says that that was, that was a miscommunication. And then he says he wants to keep the schools open all summer. So it's like, where are they going with this?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know. First of all, I heard that thing about keeping the schools open all summer, and I'm like, is this one of those things where we're going to have to hear that Biden was talking in his personal capacity or something? Because this makes no sense. You're telling me the teachers' unions are going to just be like, oh, okay, no problem, we'll teach through the summer. Anybody who thinks that that's going to be an acceptable solution for teachers' unions has not been paying attention. Absolutely insane, not going to happen. What you might see in the summer is they're going to hire these aides or monitors who are obviously not unionized, therefore completely safe from the coronavirus, to sit in rooms with kids on laptops while they do work. Fine, I might see that. But the idea that teachers are going to come in and teach throughout the summer when they weren't supposed to or not scheduled to is absolutely not happening.
I'm talking to Carol Markowitz. You can read her stuff at the New York Post and at Spectator, as well as some other publications. Carol, my other question for you is that he tends to say this, that, you know, the schools, he doesn't know what's happening, and, you know, oh, the schools are going to open and then they're not going to open and then, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But what I've been noticing on Twitter is that a lot of these blue check marks and other people, whether it's, you know, Cuomo people or whoever, they keep trying to gaslight parents into convincing them that, like, oh, no, schools are open. You just don't understand our version of what opening means.
Yeah, Randy Weingarten, head of the National Teachers Unions, she said yesterday that schools can open when they hit some, you know, key safety measures, just like New York City schools. And my jaw just dropped, and I thought, New York City schools, if that's the barometer for openness, we're in big, big trouble. New York City schools are largely closed. Elementary schools are only open on a part-time basis. There's a few that are open full-time. Middle schools have been closed since November. High schools are closed. All of this is absolutely no indication that anyone else should follow what New York City is doing. If we want to follow someone, let's follow Florida. Let's follow Texas. Their schools have been open since the fall, and they're open full time, and they're open in a normal way, and they didn't, you know, reinvent the wheel. They didn't put in new filtration systems. They're largely not social distancing. They are wearing masks in everywhere that I've heard. But that's it. It's not some crazy system designed by teachers' unions to keep them home.
And I just find it amazing that Joe Biden, who's 78 years old, he's probably going to be a one-term president, that he's afraid to stand up to these teachers' unions. I mean, who else is he going to be bullied by if he can be bullied by them?
Well, absolutely. You know, that's the thing. A lot of people refer to powerful teachers' unions. Teachers' unions can't by themselves be powerful. Politicians have to give them power. And in places like New York, that's exactly what they've done. They've given them power to run the system. And what you're seeing on a national level right now is teachers' unions deciding scientific policy. When the head of the CDC came out and said that teachers don't need to be vaccinated to go back to school, she had to rewrite that. And Jen Psaki said that she was talking in her personal capacity. And then she sat down to make policy with teachers' unions, not with scientists, but with teachers' unions, about how to reopen schools. So they're running the show, and anybody who doesn't think so has not been paying attention. At this point, Mayor Lightfoot in Chicago is aware of it, and she even admits that that's the case. So that's where we are.
I mean, Carol, T.J. Ducklow was speaking in his personal capacity. It didn't end well for him. He had to resign. No, Carol, my next question for you has to be, a lot of these people, when they were running, when the Biden administration was campaigning, they were saying they knew everything. They had all the answers. Trump was doing absolutely everything wrong. And it was easy for them to make their decisions because all they had to do was say, okay, what's Trump doing? we're going to go with the opposite. You know, like, what medicine does Trump think works? Right. We'll say it's going to kill people. What does Trump want to do? We'll do the exact opposite. But now that they're in power, I'm noticing that there's a big, like, mystery, a lot of, like, shrugging shoulders. We're not sure. It's mysterious. And I want you to listen to this cut. This is Andy Slavitt, the White House COVID advisor. Listen to this cut, cut 24.
States like Florida and California, California basically in lockdown, and their numbers aren't that different from Florida.
Well, good morning, Stephanie. Look, there's so much of this virus that we think we understand, that we think we can predict, that's just beyond a little bit beyond our explanation. What we do know.
Beyond our explanation, but yet they're very confident in keeping the kids out of school.
That's right. You know, I think the question of Florida should be put to every single COVID expert on our TV. Why is Florida not seeing mass deaths? I spent some time in Florida. Nobody wears masks outside, which I think is the sane thing to do. I'm actually very careful, and I take COVID very seriously, but I don't understand the point of wearing a mask when you're alone on the street, like I see all the time in New York. I mean, COVID's not going to jump up out from behind the tree and get you. You get it from other people. So if you're not around other people, why are you wearing a mask? And so, you know, I want to hear more about why Florida is doing so great. The kids are playing sports without masks. The kids are in school every day. People are dining inside restaurants. They're in bars. There's not a lot of social distancing going on. Why is Florida doing so well while no one else is? And the answer that I often get is, oh, the weather. Well, California has very similar weather. How come California is not doing as well?
And something that I never really thought of, which I should have, but people oftentimes will compare the numbers between Florida and New York and California. And someone pointed out the other day on Twitter, they said, factor in that Florida has a lot of old people there. That's where old people in this country go to Florida. So they're doing a good job in general, or a better job than New York and California. But then when you add on that factor, it really makes it seem like they're doing something right.
Right. And they also have more people, 2 million more people than New York State. So if you add that, it's really impressive. You know, it's just, there's no two ways about this. Lockdowns don't work. And Florida has decided to shun lockdowns, and they're having better results because of it. I mean, part of it, I think, is, and I've written about this before, but I don't think we can maintain full-on masking all the time and staying home all the time. And that's the problem with lockdowns or these mask mandates. They don't take human nature into account. We need to see each other. We're, you know, social creatures. And you can keep saying, oh, stay home, mask up, but it's impossible to do long-term. And so what I think Florida found, and I think what Texas has found and other states, is a happy medium. People do wear masks. They do keep their distance in certain situations, but they don't do it all the time. And that makes it easier for them to do it in actual risky situations.
And Carol, I'm speaking with Carol Markowitz from the New York Post, and her article is called "The Vaccines Will End the Pandemic, Whether Dr. Fauci Likes It or Not." I want to end with this last question, and I'm going to quote from your article. You said, "Now is our time for choosing. Do we want to take the forever pandemic path, or do we accept and celebrate the miraculous science behind the vaccines and move on from this painful episode?" My question for you, Carol, is, do you think the Democrats want to move on from this painful episode?
I think some do. I think that there's definitely a contingency of people on the left who have gotten really comfortable staying home and having their Amazon packages brought to them and having their food delivered and having just, you know, time with their families, and everything's really cozy and they have childcare. I get that this has not been a really bad time for a lot of people. I think there's a whole class of people that I call the pajama class, and I agree. I'm in that pajama class with them. Anybody who's staying home in their sweatpants and still getting paid, we're in that pajama class. But this has been a really tough time for many, many Americans, and I think it's time for that pajama class to look beyond just their own happiness and see how damaging this has been to so, so many people.
I was just going to say, Carol, but I didn't want to blow your cover. I was on one of the Clubhouse groups a couple weeks ago, or maybe it was last week, and it was all about New York and whether New York was dead or not. And I hopped on. I'm not from New York, but I saw you were in there, and I thought, okay, I'll give this a listen. And you mentioned the pajama class. And I thought that's a perfect way to put it, because a lot of people think, well, you know, work from home, be safe. You know, you have to care about other people. You can't be so reckless. And it's like, well, you can afford to live like that. Some people don't have that option.
Right. Absolutely. And I've been saying that all along, that the people who are most outspoken on keeping lockdowns going have absolutely not suffered because of those lockdowns.
Exactly. Carol Markowitz, thank you so much for joining us. Follow Carol at K-A-R-O-L. We'll be back on the other side. This is The Grace Curley Show.
The Grace Curley Show will be right back. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Can you just weigh in finally, Jim, on the humility? I mean, when he talked at the end of the town hall about, like, I wake up in the White House and I ask Jill, where are we? And I'm uncomfortable with them putting my suit jacket on and having all this help. I mean, what a breath of fresh air.
Boy, it's true, Bobby. I teared up at that. That's Scranton Joe. That's the kid who watched his dad go to work every day and struggle. And then one day he got to grow up and be the president of the United States.
You teared up. Was that who was that who teared up?
That was Jim Messina, former Obama campaign manager.
Good Lord. Get a grip. Stephen Colbert teared up when Trump wouldn't concede. And that other guy, Taylor, I'm going to forget his name here. Who was the guy who teared up on election day? On Inauguration Day. He got really, really welled up. I can't remember his
name.
There
were so many.
Somebody will remind me. It's really, really getting pathetic. Listen to this tweet from John Avlon. Watching the Biden town hall on CNN, in such a contrast with the past president, Biden balances empathy with policy specifics. He is unfiltered and speaks in circuitous sentences with self-deprecation. But he is authentic, and that's the quality most folks want in their president. He's authentically insane.
Was Donald Trump not authentic?
Oh, Donald Trump was so authentic. Donald Trump was too authentic for his own good sometimes. But let's play a few more clips here. Wait till you hear. This is Biden advisor Simone Sanders. You know it's bad when CNN is asking you yes or no, answer the question. This is cut 21.
Prioritize is one thing, and I think there's wide agreement they should be prioritized, and why not? Is it necessary, though? That's the question, and really is a yes-no question.
Well, John, I think the real question, frankly, if I can be frank here, is what you're getting to is it safe for kids to go back to school? And the president and vice president...
Actually not. In this case, that's not the question. The question is it safe for teachers to go back to school? And that's a very specific question in this case. And again, I'm not sure, I don't understand why it's a hard question to answer. It may be that you want every teacher to be vaccinated. It may be the answer is, yeah, teachers should, if they can, be vaccinated before they return to school, but it's not necessary.
Well, John, I think the president has been clear, the vice president has been clear, and I think I was really clear just now that...
Frankly, to be frank, I don't think you're being clear at all. But here's what I refuse to do. I refuse to give John Berman credit for asking that question that should have been asked months ago when Biden was campaigning. I'm sick of people saying, good on CNN for asking the tough question. I see that a lot on social media. People are like, congrats. No, those questions should have been asked a long time ago. We have Jason Miller coming up. We also have Dennis from the Fallins Be In and Howie Carr. We'll be back on the other side, guys. This is The Grace Curley Show.